Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Warning, this is the Freedom Fiends Midweek Non-Radio Podcast. Unlike our weekend live talk radio shows, where we adhere to all regulations and community standards, this cast may contain cussing and or prurient subject matter. If you are easily offended, please leave now. But tune in Saturdays and Sundays to our live talk radio show. If you're not easily offended, prepare to be entertained, informed, and enlightened.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com.
This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Show, and today our guest is Max Borders from FEE, and he's a magazine publisher. Tell us about FEE and about your magazine.
Sure. The Foundation for Economic Education is the original libertarian think tank in the United States, founded in 1946. That's a pretty proud legacy. You know, every day I wake up and I think, whoa, I've inherited something really special. We also put out the flagship publication of FEE called The Freeman, and I'm the editor of it.
That's great. How did you inherit it? Like, was it passed in a will to you?
I mean, inherit as a tradition. I mean, you know, Ludwig von Mises used to be in, you know, in work in residence there at FEE, and all these great editors like
Ayn Rand, right? Ayn Rand worked there, right? Or was on the board?
Well, she certainly had some associations with it. And I mean, there are just so many great names with great legacy. I'm pretty proud to be part of that tradition.
That's excellent. So tell me more about the organization and about the Freeman.
Well, again, 1946. There's a fellow, you may have read his work. There's a good pamphlet called I, Pencil.
Oh, yeah.
It does a great job of explaining spontaneous order and economic order and global interconnection of economic ideas and people and resources to create something very simple called a pencil. The beauty of this man was he was able to tell these kind of stories and articulate pretty sophisticated economic concepts for people to understand who were newcomers, able to, you know, really synthesize these concepts. His name is Leonard Reed, and he really was the driver behind the formation of FEE. On up through the years, you had people like Ludwig von Mises, Henry Hazlitt, the author of Economics in One Lesson. And over the years, just, you know, the organization has touched a lot of people, both with the seminars that we put on, mostly during the summer, as well as the people who came across the Freeman, usually in print form back in those days, and were somehow moved by the ideas, thought, hey, wow, this is me. So that's really the legacy that we've inherited. Now, in more recent years, we've tried to refashion for the digital age. And we really are focusing on the next generation of young people to bring them into the ideas. That's really our focus now. We try to do that not by dumbing things down, but making things more accessible.
Yeah, my co-host recently said something that was very funny and very true about the history of libertarianism. He said something about being an OG libertarian, which is kind of a hip-hop term for original gangster. It means like you were doing the thing everyone's doing now back before everyone else. And he said like, what an OG libertarian to him means is
someone who was doing it before the internet, because now it's so easy. You can literally like log on to Facebook and get it and get a lesson in economics and become a libertarian in an evening, you know. But back then you had to go find pamphlets and books, and you had to, I remember when I was 18, I'm 49 now. When I was 18 and went to college, I was a stoner. I mean, I haven't done any drugs in like 20 years, but I was a stoner. And first day in college, walked into the student union, and the Libertarian Party had a card table there. And, you know, they were like shiny, kind of young Republican looking libertarian kids, real clean cut. And they looked at me, and I looked at their pamphlets, and they could tell I was a stoner, and they said, "Oh, we're in favor of decriminalizing marijuana." And he handed me a pamphlet, and I opened it up, and it looked like school to me. And I said, "No, thanks, man," and handed it back to him. And that was like, I didn't even like think about libertarianism again, really, until I was like 41. You know, I had my chance, but it was a pamphlet. It was too text heavy, you know. And I think that, with video and with audio and with everything on the internet, able to like make everything connected to everything else so anybody can get an idea out there, it makes it a lot easier. And that does not cheapen it. It actually makes it worth more to everybody because everyone can get it. But I've heard like Lou Rockwell talk about he used to get faxes every morning from Murray Rothbard, you know, faxes. Think about that. Faxes. So yeah.
Well, and you know, I don't want to admit my age, but I'm getting up there myself. And, you know, back when I was in high school, the story was, the story for people my age and whatever you think about Ayn Rand, the story was somebody handed me a copy of Atlas Shrugged, or somebody handed me a copy of The Fountainhead. And these days it's somebody showed me a Ron Paul video on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's a seismic change in the way, you know, we are reducing the cost of exposing people to our ideas. And yet we're also it's sort of like the Red Queen effect. You know, it takes all the running you can do to stay in the same place because all the bad ideas get to people more, you know, quickly too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you guys were a publishing company or had a publishing arm. You still do. But back in the day, I mean, the FEE used to publish books and pamphlets and sell them and give them away at colleges, right? Like back in the 40s.
That's right. And we still do that to some degree, although we don't have the publishing house anymore. We actually used to run an outfit called Laissez-Faire Books that is now, I think it's controlled by Agro Financial. And they've done a terrific job with it. Jeff Tucker was the editor-in-chief over there for a while, and he's a good friend of mine, writes for the Freeman a lot. And but that actually used to be controlled at some stage by Fee. It's been passed to one person to the next, and they've really done a great job of bringing Laissez-Faire Books into the digital age. Now what we do is, if it makes sense to put in print still we'll do that. Because I feel like this is my personal theory on it, and my bosses would probably get me in trouble for saying this, but there's nothing like the quality of bathroom reading.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So some things still belong in print, and we do a lot of that. We do when we hand out stuff to young people on campuses and so on like that, SFL conferences and people picking up the Freeman and spending more quality time with it than just sort of a kind of ephemeral contact online. We like that. We think it's a higher quality, richer experience, but it is expensive.
Yeah. I don't think there's a cheapening to putting stuff out digitally. And a lot of people who say that are people who like, they'd like to be published. They'd like to have CDs put out by a record company, and they never have. But I've actually been signed to Warner Brothers, and I've put out records independently. I've self-published books, and I also make a living publishing books, being paid advances and royalties by a company that is the biggest textbook publisher in the country. But I still feel like I don't even want to do that anymore. I'd rather do a blog post and, you know, slap an Amazon link on it and make affiliate money than work with an editor these days and work with publishing and work with, you know, working 80 hours a week for 9 months on something. And then when you're done, you turn it in. And then 6 months later, it comes out and some of it's already out of date. I've done that to the maximum amount in a lot of ways and just don't even want to do it anymore. And I really think that a lot of older people have kind of a thought of there's a preciousness to something you can hold in your hand, where most people who are under 30 now don't even get it. Like I remember seeing on Family Guy, there was a cartoon where – you know, the dog who's like human, who can speak and think and is smarter than the whole family, is like Brian. Out trying to pick up a woman. Don't ask me why, it's an interspecies relationship. That's another story. But, you know, he's out picking up women in a bar and he's talking to some girl who's like 21. She never looks up from typing on her little, you know, chromed robot phone. She's like, "Hey, what do you do?" She never looks up. And he says, "Oh, I'm a writer." And she says, "What's a writer?" And he says, "I write books." And she says, "What are books?" And he says, "It's like the internet, but printed on a crushed up tree." And she goes, "That's weird." And then she goes, "Want to go have sex in the bathroom?" And he's like, "Sure." And they walk away. you know, I mean, those are people who are not going to go to the library. And like in my town, they're trying to like add a one penny sales tax for a limited time, for an extra cent on every dollar to build another library. And I'm like, first of all, that's taxation, it's theft. But second of all, it's like a library, what, like a museum for dead media? You know, who needs that anymore?
No, it is. And the universities are the worst about it. I mean, they're really crony boondoggle type projects that, you know, sometimes they'll argue, well, we have media centers in there. People can come get on computers in the library and so on. It's like, well, why not just give your students laptops rather than building a $60 million library that houses all the stacks.
It's a jobs program, and it's a way to force people to buy paper books that are written by the professors. I mean, in college, every one of my professors had books and assigned them. And, you know, I talked to one of them and he's like, "Yeah, I sell at least 30 of these every semester worldwide," you know, because he's assigning it.
Right.
So what is
– it's sad to me, though, I tell you, because I really like long form. I've written a book.
You won a prize for your book, huh? What prize was it and what's the book?
Well, Super Wealth is the name of the book. Why We Should Stop Worrying About the Gap Between Rich and Poor is the subtitle, and it's, you know, provocatively titled, obviously, to get attention. But it's just the whole process of going through publishing, whether you do something, some sort of hybrid of vanity publishing these days, whatever you have to do to accelerate the process. You just described this process of publishing that it's terrible, and yet, if people adopt ebooks, I'm going to be okay with it, because I think there is value in long form. There is value in making this complete, total immersive case where you're not just picking up bits and bobs and trying to stitch them together from, you know, Twitter messages or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah. I feel us moving away from that medium, even with ebooks. So I still like long form in video and, you know, movies and documentaries. I think there's a lot to be gained from really exploring something in that kind of depth. But the kids today, you know, they've got their own ideas and you've got to meet them where they are.
Yeah, I've heard it said that in, you know, 30 or 50 years, printed books will still exist, but they'll kind of hold the same place in society that, like, say, oil lamps do. You know, something that some people collect because they're cool and they're old and, you know, because they work when the power goes out.
Right.
So I've talked to Jeffrey Tucker about him, his process of putting everything up online of all the great OG libertarians. And he said that he's run into problems with usage rights because there are people who are dead, whose estates, whose family are like, "Oh, we don't want to give this away. We want to make, you know," they don't want to have it on the internet where a million people will read it for free. They want to have it in a bookstore where they'll sell 5,000 copies of it. I'm not going to say that's their right to do, because I don't believe in that kind of intellectual property, but I understand them. But okay, let's not even take it from a moral standpoint. You know, let's take it from a usefulness standpoint. I believe that if someone has an idea that they want to get out, that they're on a mission with, like liberty, it is shooting themselves in the foot to put controls on it. How do you personally feel about that, and how does your organization feel about that?
We absolutely agree with you. And in fact, we have an open reprint policy with all of our stuff. So you could take some article I wrote yesterday and republish it on your own website. We kindly ask people to credit us, you know, for having produced it and all like that. But we want to blast our message out far and wide. And we think this medium is just for that. You know, I probably will make a lot of enemies saying this, but I'm no stranger to enemies, so here goes. I think about these academics. They get their stuff in these journals. They publish in the journals, and they have the incentive to do so. In other words, they understand that they're in the the white paper industrial complex of academe. And they've got to get their journal articles there because that is the currency of power in that guild.
Is it still publishing on paper? Is that still part of the currency of that? Or is it
And they have these paywall sites that you can access them if you're a member of their get behind the paywall.
Yeah.
I understand there's I understand that in many respects this is a way they prop up their guild, but in terms of idea dissemination, if you've really got great ideas, let's get it out there. Let's put it on the web.
Well, that's actually what the web was invented for. A lot of people don't realize this, even if they've heard about the history of the web. You know, the internet in various forms has been around since the late 60s, early 70s, but the World Wide Web started in 1993. One guy invented it, Tim Berners-Lee, at the CERN facility in Switzerland. It was literally invented to publish physics papers within one organization, and then they opened it up to other organizations. And, you know, at that time, if you could have logged on to some kind of server, you could have accessed it easily. There was no paywall, there was no password, but it was literally invented to publish physics papers for peer review in one organization of people using different computer operating systems. That's why it was invented. Paywalls are ridiculous. I mean, a good example is my local paper, the Casper Tribune, or we call it the Red Star Tribune because it's so commie it's so lefty in a righty kind of state. It's kind of funny, but they give the paper, it's daily, but they throw a copy of it on my yard, everyone in the county's yard every Wednesday, whether you want it or not. I've called them up and asked them to stop and they won't. So they're literally littering. And because I don't read it, I used to like pick it up and go, okay, let's see, what's the city council doing to me this week, you know? But now I just throw it away. So literally every week, someone drives by, litters on my yard, and I have to go pick it up and throw it away. Because if I didn't pick it up, I'd get fined eventually, you know, or people think I wasn't home and rob the house or something or try to break in. So I have to go pick up this litter they throw every day. Now, their website has a paywall. You can look at 7 articles a month before it starts asking you for a credit card number. And it's $9.99 a month, which is the same price as like the New York Times, who are failing with their paywall. And I'm like, really? A little cowtown newspaper in Wyoming thinks they're worth what the New York Times is? And the thing is, like, they probably make more money from just having it free, and they could have more ad views. You know, their money is advertisement. And what I think, this is my theory, I think they probably have it in all the high schools and colleges here and have the high schools and colleges pay for it, basically. I think that's the only people paying money to read it online.
Well, and I say, if you want to have a paywall, bless you. But there's so much free content out there that you're competing with free.
Yeah.
Good luck with you. To me, it's a matter of, economics is going to decide whether or not you remain viable or solvent as a business adopting that model. I personally am going to, if I work for a nonprofit, so we get support from donors and so on. But from where I sit, even if I was going to try something that was a different kind of model that was for profit and have information out there, I think advertising's got to be the way to go. Tip jars. There's just all kinds of ways to do it.
Or price it right. I mean, I think they would probably make more money charging 99 cents a month than $9.99 a month. Same thing with the Ron Paul thing. It's like Ron Paul has a channel now that's, I think, $9.99 a month. And there's so much Ron Paul stuff on the internet already. Like, you could literally go on YouTube and probably watch Ron Paul videos without repeating anything 24 hours a day for like 14 months. There's so much of it out there. And it's like, do you really want to pay $9.99 a month to hear what he's saying about Obamacare? I can tell you what he's going to say about Obamacare. The same thing I'm saying about Obamacare, because I grew up listening to Ron Paul. I mean, I don't have a moral problem with that either. It's not quite intellectual property. I have a problem with it if somebody repost something outside the paywall and the paywall owner sues them. But what are your feelings on intellectual property, period? And what is your organization's feelings on it?
You know, we haven't come down as an organization on IPR. And
by come down, you mean you don't have a set statement on it, or you haven't?
No. In fact, one of the things that I've tried to do with the Freeman, we have a debate thing called the Arena. And if you click on fee.org/Freeman, you'll find the Arena there. And the Arena debates are a way that ANCAPs, libertarians, Randians, all types can find different debates between each other. And it's, to my mind, it's an interesting way. We all fall under the same umbrella. So where are the overlaps? What's interesting and where are the differences? Why do we have these differences? So it's a way of talking through these ideas without trying to be monolithic. I don't think there are some issues that we kind of come down on where we're so frequent with our views on it and our contributions on it that it's pretty obviously our stance. But in many respects, we don't come down on it. IPR is an interesting one. Now, I'm just going to talk as Max, not as Fee.
Okay.
I have slowly but surely over the years been won over to the side. I mean, the pragmatic case against IPR has already been made. In other words, we're living in a digital age now, and these
– the cow's out of the barn, and you can't shut the door now.
Exactly. And I think trying to criminalize – something that's so obviously difficult to do by making examples of people or something like that is kind of a fool's errand. So here's where I struggle with this issue. On the one hand, for example, let's take a medicine, a drug that's been developed. Okay, I know that if we take the patent off of this drug, that it will be duplicated, reverse engineered, whatever you want to call it. And lots of people, companies will be producing it, and lots of people have it available to them at low cost. That's a good thing, right? But I also know that if there is an FDA process and an R&D process that takes, 5 to 7 years to go through, the patent regime is a way of mitigating having to go through that cost in that regulatory process. Unless we dismantle that regulatory regime and reduce the costs of R&D and testing, then it will be a simple matter for someone to put years and $500 million into something and have it perhaps stolen. And by stolen, I don't mean strictly speaking, because the at issue is whether or not that's theft. But certainly the work and capital that's put into that drug is extensive, and we can't just pretend that that's not been done. Now, there are people who have creative ways to overcome these problems, trade secrets and so on and so forth. But that is one of my hangups, I guess you could say, about just coming fully on board with people like Stefan Kinsella, who has some really good arguments against intellectual property rights. And I think by and large, most of it is rent seeking, and it's just a way of sticking the boot in the neck of people who are small website owners or upstarts who can really create value in society. So I'm more and more every day opened my eyes to getting rid of IPR, but I still have some hangups, I have to admit.
For anyone who doesn't know, IPR stands for intellectual property rights, which is patent, trademark, and copyright. Personally, I think patent and copyright should go away. Trademark should still be there, but not enforced with government guns. I had a theory about a year ago that I actually just saw someone state more clearly how it would work. And of course, I didn't go out and patent this idea. I'm not a patent troll, but it was basically an idea of how Bitcoin could be used to replace trademark, because you can and copyright, because you can, I had kind of a vague idea of like, well, in a libertarian paradise, how would you prevent someone from making fake Rolexes? And basically, the idea is you could use double key encryption to have, a hologram number, half of number pair on the back of the watch etched into it, and you could wave your smartphone over it, and it would check if it's legit, using the same kind of protocol that Bitcoin uses. And there's an article in Reason that just came out called like Bitcoin More Than Money that explains even in more detail how that could work and how it could work with copyright. Like with copyright, an example is you can publish a PDF online and you could have a cryptographic signature in it. And then as soon as you publish it, you could include that cryptographic signature in the blockchain of a Bitcoin. You could send one hundredth of a Bitcoin from yourself to a friend or from yourself to another Bitcoin address that you own, and it would be in the public record, and everybody downloads that every time they update the Bitcoin blockchain. So literally there would be a record of proof of, this person created and published this document on this date.
That's pretty cool. I like it.
Yeah, there's so much that things like Bitcoin could do that replace so much of what governments say they have to exist to do. It's like, who would build the roads? Bitcoin. I mean, that's kind of a simplified answer, but it's pretty accurate with the amount of things you can do with publicly released semi-anonymous cryptographic hash number that's shared and everybody has a reason to share it.
You know, I mean, end-to-end crypto everything is going to really disrupt so much of what the government justifies its existence with. It's not even funny. And I'm just loving watching it unfold. It's absolutely, to my mind, just super cool. And the great thing about it is there is a massive constituency developing for it, which is to say people use it, like it, and they like it better than the alternatives. It's going to be very, very difficult to roll it back at that point, which is great. That's democracy. This every 2 years spectacle that we see is not democracy. This is democracy. People actually instantiating choices and creating constituencies that are unstoppable. It's interesting because, you know, you said, you know, today that we would talk about this article I wrote about fallacies.
I forgot about that. We could get to that. That was a great article, and that's what made me want to interview you. But we've gone in so many other cool directions. I'm like, I had things to ask you, but we're not anywhere near done. So keep going.
Well, that's great. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to say, not about that article, which the article's fun. You know, I talk about fallacies people use against libertarians. It's a fun piece, and it's, you know, it sort of assumes that libertarians are going to be arguing on Facebook, which we often are, or on Twitter or whatever. But I actually think that more than that, we are on the cusp of something very special in that we don't have to argue anymore. We don't have to identify the fallacies anymore. What we have to do and what people are doing is, to borrow a term from Michelangelo, is criticizing through creation. He said, criticize by creating. That is where it's at. That is the cutting edge of the libertarian movement right now, is actually creating, bringing into existence parallel institutions, parallel money, you name it, that people are out there doing it. New ways for people to form mutual aid societies with healthcare. BitMessage is another where people can't read your emails.
There's a really good quote I like that kind of goes back to what we're talking about, the value of bathroom reading over the value of, you know, beautifully bound books. Jean Cocteau said, film will only become art when its materials are as inexpensive as pencil and paper. And I think we're kind of at that, not just with film, but with everything, with publishing, with radio, et cetera. You know, I've struggled my whole life, or fought with the idea of trying to be on radio. And I finally got on at age 49, at the point where I finally have something to say, and 49, fortunately, is actually kind of young for a talk radio host. So I probably have a bit of a career with it building. And the thing is, though, I really think that radio, terrestrial radio, is going to become obsolete and or incredibly censored in the next 5 to 10 years. So I'm kind of like working 80 hours a week at getting on more radio stations to the point where I can go back to the internet. But we'll go back to the internet with a lot more visibility. So it's kind of a weird time to be a new golden age of radio, where like you can do it from your home. You know, you can get on the radio and scream at the government 24/7 without being shot, and people still listen to it. You know, I think that's about a 5-year window that's going to close.
So you're straddling it right now, and at some point, you know, you're going to have to take toe out of terrestrial radio and get it fully into the digital.
We were digital for 2 years before we were on radio. We've only been on radio 6 months, and we're on 15 stations and adding one about every 2 weeks at this point, one more station. But I think that it's going to reach a point in 5 years when we're on 100 to 200 stations, when stations start folding. Or I have another theory that, you know, President Hillary Clinton, Obama has not touched talk radio. And, you know, the Democrats have been screaming for years, we need to have the fairness doctrine. You know, for every hour of Rush Limbaugh, we need to have an hour of Rachel Maddow, as if there's any difference. You know, it's just really, if there was a fairness doctrine, I would argue that the Freedom Fiends should still be on, because we're opposed to both of those. But it wouldn't work that way. They did have the fairness doctrine until Bill Clinton got rid of it. And I think President Hillary Clinton, who I think is going to be president because the Republicans are so friggin' stupid that they won't let someone like Ron Paul really run. Obama's too busy with it. Obama's like so screwed up today and everything coming at him that like he's giving medals to Oprah Winfrey because it's a distraction. But I think that Hillary is going to do something where, instead of the fairness doctrine, which will be perceived as canceling free speech, I think she's going to invoke this little known but in writing thing in the FCC charter, which is basically that terrestrial radio stations have to serve the community. And they're going to say that syndicated anti-president, you know, nationally syndicated radio doesn't serve the community. I think they're going to put that stuff on in the middle of the night when no one's awake and the AM stations all have to power, mostly have to power down to really low power. And they're going to use the EEO, you know, the equal employment thing, to create a new position at each radio station where they have someone who's a true believer liberal come in, and or true believer statist come in as an extra program director for the community. And that, you know, everything on the radio during the day is going to be an interview with the local police chief of why we need more militarized vehicles, and an interview with the local tax collector on why raising your property taxes are good. That's my prediction. I just try to get that on record as much as possible because no one's saying it, and I absolutely think that's how it's going to work.
You may be right, and it'll be an arms race at this point. I mean, really, the technology has reached the point where, okay, I may not be able to find my Freedom Fiend show on terrestrial radio at X hour like I did when I'm driving in my car. You know, those days may be over soon anyway.
Well, the thing of a really great quote I like, when Netflix came out with original programming, which was really good, David Fincher, the director of Fight Club, who was also the director of the first two episodes of House of Cards with Kevin Spacey,
great show.
He said, the era of Thursday night at 6 p.m. in front of the TV is dead. And I totally agree. I think there still will be, you know, on streaming internet, I think there still will be things that people tune in for, but more and more, there's no reason to. And it's kind of like old people still want to tune in at a certain time, but, you know, younger people are like, I can time shift it. I can listen whenever I want.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, my kid is he's being distracting or whatever because he can't get him down to go to sleep. He's almost seven. So he's entered the age where he doesn't like going to bed and he's goofing around. And, you know, if we were NBC must-see TV in 1992, I'd just have to be like, shut the door on him and catch my show, right? But now it's an issue of, okay, we pause Netflix and then we wait till we get him settled and then we start watching again.
Or in 1978, you know, your parents would turn on the Disney show, which was timed to put kids to sleep.
They put right.
on, or Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom, or something kids liked that came on between, you know, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., which is when you're going to put a kid to sleep at that age.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people do that, you know, some people do that, but they do it a la carte. And I think the promise for that is technology becomes a hydra, so that whenever the statists, Hillary Clinton comes to office and your nightmare unfolds, I think she's, just look at the way Obamacare was rolled out. Just look at the fumbliness with which they rolled out just the website. It's just an amazing example of the kind of disaster that government creates, the poor incentives, the mission creep, the everything. It's all a disaster, and it's a perfect symbol of a centralized bureaucracy trying to keep up with technologically armed swarm armies of people like you. It's just not going to happen. So yes, temporarily they may be able to regulate your show or something like that, but 2 months later, your show's up on tour. Nobody can track your listenership. There's just no way to stop media. There's no way to stop speech. It is the same as Cody Wilson's gun. Forget it.
I was just going to mention Cody Wilson. We've interviewed him a few times, and I've had a lot of chats with him off radio too. And I asked him last time before last we interviewed him. We've interviewed him three times, actually. The second time we interviewed him, I asked him, like, and this was when he was facing all of the, you know, might go to jail if he keeps doing the gun thing, which he doesn't need to do anymore because it's out there and other people have actually improved it. You know, he did the proof of concept. He can step away from it. I said, what do you think the future is going to hold, you know, in America and in the world for governments and freedom and liberty and tyranny? And he said, without skipping a beat, he said, you know, I think it's going to get – governments are going to become far more irrelevant to the point where people just ignore them, but it's going to be combined with governments in individual cases cracking down incredibly hard and publicly on one person out of, you know, 1,000 they can even catch. I think that's pretty accurate, but I think it's going to be harder and harder to catch people doing things, and I think it's going to be, you know, things that aren't real crimes that governments want to make into crimes. And I also think that technology is going to make it just so much more irrelevant, you know, to where, like, You know, no one calls AAA anymore to plan a trip. They go on Google, you know, no, not that that's a government thing, but it was kind of tied in with the creation of the roads and the governments. But, you know, nobody, less and less people trust the FDA because the FDA approves things that kill people and squashes innovation to where if you have something new that's useful, that's going to save people, it's too expensive to roll out. And people are just going to say, hey, you know, I read about this herb that works for it too. It's called marijuana and it's legal in some states or something like that. You know, just things that the government does, like saying we need to control the money supply because you're not smart enough to make your own money. But Bitcoin is like a thing. People could actually take that technology. I mean, we could make theme coin, you know, if we had a programmer. I don't know if I want to get involved in something like that, but there are other coin, you know, other encrypted currencies that work the same way. And the source code's out there so people can do it. And, you know, basically the government had a meeting on it the other day in Congress, and I was surprised that they basically said they're not going to try to regulate it right now. And a tweet I got right after that was a guy said, they realize they can't stop it, so they're going to pretend they allowed it. You know, let's take a break and go to the market and then come back for more on The Freedom Fiends with Max Borders of Fee.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is Mr. Michael Dean. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends. We're doing an interview with Max Borders from FEE, F-E-E, and the Freeman magazine. So FEE is Foundation for Economic Education. It was started in 1946. Not to be confused with the EFF, which is the Electronic Frontier Foundation, other good people who the Fiends support, who started in 1990. These guys, FEE, are very old school, Foundation for Economic Education. So, Max, is Max Borders your real name?
Yeah, that's my real name.
Okay. I thought it was a made-up name, like you used to be a right-winger who wanted maximum borders, like you wanted to put a Berlin Wall around America.
No, that's not me. In fact, if I could maximize all the borders away, I would.
Why is that?
I think that when we really start thinking about how arbitrary it is for some person to be born on one plot of soil and another person to be born on another, and we attach certain rights and privileges to that, it starts to seem pretty silly to me. And I've been heavily influenced by some thinkers recently in a tradition called panarchy, which is a really interesting sort of spin-off of libertarianism that helped to make that even more curious to me, this idea that we are, by virtue of birth, attached to blood or soil or rules all in one. I think it's pretty silly.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would put a caveat with that. I would want to end all welfare the day before you do that, but that would include corporate welfare, which most right-wingers who are in favor of giant walls around America do want to end welfare for the single mother, but they sure don't want to end it for the oil companies and the corn farmers and the people growing crops that the market wouldn't even bear, to where you have to have a congressman writing bills to force ethanol into the gasoline so they can sell the corn to the government.
Yeah. And in the process, destroying the environment.
Yeah.
I fully agree with that. I mean, dismantling the sort of the crony capitalist edifice. But I don't want to sound like I'm just some crazy, nutbag. I mean, there are certain traditions that I appreciate about, being an American. I think there is an extent to which, even though the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are becoming increasingly obsolete by virtue of, politicians and their what they get up to, and also by the fact that that these are exploited. Even the Constitution is exploited for all manner of crazy things these days. I still think that the original intent of these ideas, the Lockean tradition, is something that we have to respect, and we in some sense come from it as libertarians. But I also know that I feel a sense of kindredness and connection with people all over the world who think like me. You know, I know a guy in Belgium I talk with online, this young man who is who's from Belgium. There's another guy that John Zub, who is got me into the panarchist tradition, who's in Australia. There's a woman from Sweden who is an ex-mercenary employed by the U.S. government, who has since become sort of an anarcho type. And these are interesting people, and we all share the same sensibilities, the same ideas. And once you start getting to know people on Facebook from other countries and realize how much you have in common and how much you think alike and how much you think of them as someone you would like to love or protect, the fact that we were all born into these rule sets and these arbitrary attachments to soil seemed kind of weird.
Yeah.
You know?
A really funny ironic example of that. We have people from all over the world writing us, and we have two fans that we know of that write us frequently and post in kind of broken English about how much they like our show, who are in Iran. And, they're young guys. They're like, 21, 25, something like that. And they're into liberty. They're into the ideas of this. They're not into the old conservative Muslim religious theocracy kind of ways of their country. My co-host, Nima Vedati, who's out on paternity leave right now, we're recording this about 2 weeks before his kid's born, but he's I'm going to probably play this after his kid's born when we have an opening, because he's going to be kind of, he's taking all his Sundays off for 2 months. He'll be there on Saturdays, but he may have to take a Saturday, or I'm going to put this on a Wednesday podcast show, partially because you don't have a good enough audio. And that's one thing I'm going to do for you, is at some point sit you down and tell you what you need to buy to be able to do good interviews, because you do good interviews, and I think you should be doing interviews every week everywhere. Do you do many interviews?
I have done them, yeah, occasionally, and I want to do more. So I definitely want to download your list of stuff that'll make me sound good.
Yeah, no, I'll talk to you on the phone one-on-one and build a list for you. For free.
Awesome. That's
what, awesome. Something I like to do for people who are good. Yep. So these two guys in Iran, they love our show, and they kind of dig the fact that my co-host is Persian. His dad fled Iran right before the revolution. Nima's never been to Iran. He says he'd like to go visit his grandparents and stuff, but his dad says, no, they'll throw you in the army. They won't let you leave if you go over there. So he can't go to the country of his heritage to visit it. But we have fans there, and they love the show, but they've said several times, like, you know, to Nima, like, why do you have this beard that, you know, he has a big bushy beard like an imam or something. And to them, they're like, you know, that'd be like me dressing up as Mitt Romney to a young American libertarian. You know, like, they're like, no, that's not the cool look, man. You don't want to look like the old conservative imams. That's square. You know,
he's probably got a Austin hipster beard.
That's what it looks like to me. I mean, it is an imam beard. It's the same beard that an imam would have almost, but he just looks like an Austin hipster to me. But to guys in Iran, he looks like their grandfather and the people that want to take away their rights.
Oh, that means the government's probably monitoring the show. Hey, everybody. Hi, everybody in the Pentagon. Hi, everybody in redacted buildings there in Northern Virginia.
Redacted building number 643-A. Yeah. Oh, we opened up. We came on a new station, a 50,000-watt station in Knoxville last week, and we welcomed the new station and then said, hey, it's time for the Freedom Fiends. Fire up your recorders at your Department of Homeland Security fusion centers where the fiends are live on the air. Yeah. I've been saying for years that everything's being recorded all the time on the internet and on phones, and people told me I was crazy, but now there's proof of it. But that doesn't mean there's a person actively listening to everything. That's a shorter list. But I'm pretty sure that by the virtue of us being on radio, there's somebody listening in the government to every one of our shows, because the government has admitted that they actively monitor and listen to all talk radio in America. So, yeah. But this is going to be on the Wednesday show. It might slip through the cracks. So maybe they didn't hear you saying hi.
Well, I hope I wasn't too seditious today, but I will send them a message.
What is it?
And that is that the world is going through a process of decentralization right now that you can't stop. You might as well figure out how to join the club and go with it, go with the flow, because it's flowing away from you.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a fan of my old band, which was called Bomb. We broke up in 93. It would be kind of difficult to be in a band called Bomb now, especially getting through airports with gear that has stencils on it that says Bomb. We did get pulled over by the cops one time, and they said, we had a big amp in a big red case, and the cop said, what's in the big red case marked Bomb? And my guitar player said he was biting his tongue not to say, well, officer, sometimes we forget where we put it, so we marked it. But yeah,
that's not good.
I had a fan of my Bomb from back in the day who contacted me recently. He wrote a review of us. Like, you know, we broke up in 93 and he recently wrote a review of us and it was glowing. And I started talking to him and I'm like, what are you doing now? And he's like, oh, I work for TSA. I work in the airport. And I just railed at him, like emails back and forth, just screaming at the guy saying, how can you do that? And he finally went away. I'm sure he reported me to a supervisor, but you know, I kind of think there's a value to like just not letting people get away with stuff like that, like not do anything violent, but just get up in their grill, man. Maybe not strangers, but, you know, family members, or if you're out to dinner and there's someone, a friend of yours brought who's at the table and they say, oh, I think that drugs should be illegal and guns should be only available to the police. Like, I will get up in their face and tell them, you know, well, I own guns. You want me in a prison cell. You want me killed because I'm not going to give them up. And they're like, oh, no, I don't want you killed. You'll just give them up. And I'm like, no. you know, you want me killed and raped and murdered in a government cell. And, you know, and I tell them how the war on drugs is controlling them, even if they don't use drugs, and how if they're a gun owner, they should be against the war on drugs because it's just training for kicking indoors for taking guns away. You know, a lot of people compartmentalize their freedom. And we have a saying at the Freedom Fiends. It's the tagline of our movie, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. It's there's no such thing as half free. And that's a message that I think really needs to get out there. It's the basic, most important message, even if before you even get into like the morality of it with people. It's just there's two things to approach every argument for liberty for everybody. There's two angles. One is the angle of it's the moral thing to do. To not oppress people. But some people aren't ready for that yet. And then I try to do it in the tactical sense, in the how it will work for them, you know. And that's a really easy base. There's a million arguments for it, but one really basic one is for gun owners who think pot should be a felony. You know, you just point out to them that those guys kicking in doors for people having joints down the street, those are the same people that are going to be kicking in your doors when Nancy, you know, when Pelosi and Clinton outlaw guns in 5 years.
Absolutely. We're headed down that road. People tend to think narrowly about, you know, as long as it doesn't bother me, I don't care. Ban whatever I don't like and preserve everything I think is important. And what you get in that kind of narrow mind frame is, well, this is a good example. Yesterday, we had an AFF meeting, America's Future Foundation. They have a young professional talking about liberty issues. I was at one of their meetings last night. They had a couple guys there from the alcohol industry here in Texas. And Texas is one of those, you know, states that it's come along slowly in the post-prohibition era. But they've come along, but it's heavily regulated. And of course, special interests have accreted around the regulations. So everything is different from wine, the regulations on, and I'm not just talking about creating the stuff, I'm talking about distributing it and so on. It's different from beer brewers, alcohol distillers, and winemakers. I mean, it's all different. And the reason it's this big patchwork is because the special interest in each of these areas have had to hammer out deals, and there are people, hangers-on, who are benefiting from it, right? It's the old bootleggers and Baptists problem. So what we ended up talking about is, and I ended up asking them, and I think they were kind of taken aback, was look, you know, they kept saying stuff like, well, you know, well, that one actually benefits us a little bit. And I was like, well, why not? You know, why not just – why think of it in terms of what benefits you? I know you're struggling and to keep your business alive. It's an uphill battle battling these regulations. And you right now, you're the ones who are benefiting least from the regulatory apparatus. But would you really change your position for the guy who's got his boot on your neck and who's benefiting – you know, who's siphoning money into his pockets? Would you really do that? In other words, what you're doing – is you're participating in the game that way. What you should be advocating for is a free and open market. I said, if you could choose to have your boot in someone else's neck and be making money off of it, or if you could choose a free and open market where you have to be a good entrepreneur in order to succeed, which would you choose?
Well, it's so tied in with regulations to you gotta feed your family that people will often choose, you know, the thing that they don't really believe in that serves them at the moment because they're afraid they won't be able to feed their families. And the reason they can't feed their families with other things is because there's so much regulation. I mean, I would say in a lot of ways, you and I are far more liberal. You know, the liberals think we're nuts. They're like, you want unregulated everything, no taxes on drugs, everyone can have a gun. You're nuts. That's so conservative. And I'd say we're more liberal than, you know, the San Francisco and New York liberals because they're really conservative in a lot of ways. They want to clamp down on a lot of things, and they want to control what I'm doing in Wyoming and what you're doing in Texas. And I could give a shit what they're doing in New York and LA. I have no desire to control them. So they're big control freak conservatives. And I would say, you know, we could also point at Republicans and talk about how they're socialist and we're not. Like in my state, there's this guy named Enzi. He's our one of our two congressmen in this state. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, he's the congressman, I think. There's two senators. We only have one congressman or vice. I don't know. He's some tyrant with an office in Washington, and he's considered a really good small government Republican. And he goes on Fox News all the time and talks the talk about, you know, protecting American values and not interfering with business. But he really strongly backs the bill to tax the internet that's been sitting in the drawer for a while they fix everything else in the government. That is so square and socialist to me because, you know, he basically said, hey, I have to protect brick and mortar businesses in Wyoming. And I'm like, brick and mortar businesses in Wyoming don't sell things I need. Like, I'm looking around my room at this equipment. There's nowhere in this state you can walk into a building and buy this stuff, you know, because there's no population and there's so little broadcast here that, you know, you can't buy a Comrex unit. You can't buy a tube parametric equalizer preamp compressor. You can't buy a mixer. Yeah, I mean, you could, but it wouldn't be the right one. So he's being socialist with that, I would say. So we can call a Republican socialist. I've heard people say, what's a libertarian? I'm like, and people say wrongly, well, it's the best of both worlds of conservatives and liberals. And it's like, it's not even on the same fucking map, man.
It's a matter of which status quo do you want to protect? And yeah, they each have their own status quo that they want to protect and their own cronies and their own buddies, their own networks, and they all feed off of that, and that's the only way they're able to perpetuate their party and their power.
But we can rightfully call most Republicans socialists, and we can rightfully call most Democrats, we can say to them rightfully, you're not liberal, we are, go away.
Yeah, we should seize back the term liberal anyway because it's ours.
Yeah, classic liberal originally meant basically libertarian.
Right, but on.
It got turned into a dirty word somewhere along the line.
You know, I want to go back to this comment you made earlier, though, that was really interesting to me because I struggle with it a lot. And that's, you know, this justification of I've got to feed my family. Another version of it might be so like if I got the call one day from, say, let's say someone that I agree with 80% who's a politician, like a Ron Paul or a Rand Paul. Let's say that they invited me to come work that President Rand Paul invited me to come work in the White House. What would I do? I mean, there's a sense in which I'm not going to work at the TSA, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to frisk people and humiliate them and all for this show, this facade of security. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to get a job working as a policeman raiding innocent people's houses for victimless crimes and shoot their dogs. I'm not going to do that. But would I go fight for liberty in government, even if that made me, you know, part of the state apparatus? I ask myself that question a lot, and I can't say definitively no. What would you do?
Well, don't you have a paid position with your organization?
Sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you don't have to make that decision. Luckily, you have like the coolest job in the world is
being
libertarian think tank admin editor, you know, guy helping run the thing. That's the coolest job in the world, I think. And it's
totally.
But yeah, I mean, if you have that choice and you have kids to feed, and it's like, well, that basically comes down to a lesser of two evils, which is what government always puts people into. You know, that's what voting is. And that's what a lot of jobs are. And like, I know people that are in the army because they were starving because the economy is so wrecked because of everything the government does. I've heard it called the poverty draft. They don't have a draft anymore, but they have the poverty draft, you know? So people make decisions. I mean, that's Nima had a really good point about the TSA. Like basically the TSA, when you go through the TSA, you have someone who doesn't want a stranger touching their genitals and someone who doesn't want to touch people's genitals touching the guy's genitals. So you have governments force people into positions through pay or through power to where this is a typical government exchange. Two people who don't want to be there doing something they don't want to do, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right.
I've always done in that choice, you know, in that that Sophie's choice with the gun to your head is I've always, for the past 11 years, I've worked for myself and worked at home and made a lot less money than I could make doing a lot of other jobs and just learned to get by. I mean, half the articles I write are like on how to do media on the cheap. You know, we have an ad for my blog, Creamy Radio Audio. It says, want to learn to do Cadillac sound, caviar sound on a cat food budget. And that's kind of what I do. And part of what I make my living at is teaching people how to live really poor. And I'm not as poor as I used to be. You know, I own a mortgage. I was going to say I own a house, but my wife and I own a mortgage, which is more accurate. You know, and I'm never starving anymore. But I spent so long living on crumbs that I got really good at it to the point where when I started to make a little money, I can live like a king. And, you know, like when we got on here to do this interview, you were like, man, your voice sounds great. And it's like, I have the same equipment that a lot of people have, but they don't sound great. But I figure out how to make it work. And I spend a lot of my time doing that. So I guess my answer is I try not to be in situations where I have to choose the lesser of two evils, even if it means only spending $100 a year on clothes and sharing a car with my wife.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah.
And I asked myself the same question about, you know, somebody who's running a $1 billion company and his biggest competitor takes subsidies or, you know, takes the tax loophole or whatever, you know, should he or she do that with their competing company? And my answer is usually if you can get away with not doing it, don't do it and be a person of principle. But if you have to stay competitive, don't hate the player, hate the game. And I think the Ice-T quote is perfectly apt there. So if I found out that John Mackey, the, you know, the libertarian owner of Whole Foods here in Austin, who, I really like him. I like his stuff. But if I found out his company was, you know, his army of lawyers was engaging in some sort of rent seeking to build a store, or to take in an ag subsidy or something like that, he didn't make the rules. He's just got to play by them against other people who are playing by the same rules.
And he's actually one of the good ones. Like he gave people – I knew people in Houston that worked for Whole Foods, and it's a great place to work. I mean, he gives people health benefits when he's not legally required to, and he gives people flex time. And everyone I know – everyone – he's like a libertarian small government Republican, and everyone that works there, you know, the average – I don't want to collectivize the collectivists, but the average person I've met, or a lot of people I've met who work there, are practically communist Democrat, you know, young people who think the worst thing you could be is like to like Ron Paul because he's a Republican. And they actually boycotted that guy when he said something that was, you know, very Ayn Randian. I forget what it was, but do you remember that boycott?
Yeah, I do. Well, there's a couple things. There was the first one that was his Obamacare article in the Wall Street Journal that got them boycotting his stores. And it turns out he was right. You know, he must be loving it right now because he was absolutely right.
No, because nobody remembers. Nobody remembers. And, you know, that guy really has the right to criticize. I mean, anybody has the right to criticize government healthcare, but that guy can really do it because he's been providing non-government healthcare forever. That's better than Obamacare, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the most recent one was him going on NPR and saying that Obamacare is fascist. And strictly speaking, it is. Now, that's bad PR.
It's fascist, but, it is. But so is, you know, the small government Republican in my state who wants to tax sales over the internet. Fascist just literally, I mean, it's generally associated with ultra tyranny of, you know, Hitler or Stalin or Mussolini. But literally,
people don't know what they mean when they say it.
It literally just means government not quite taking, you know, in communism, they take all industry. In fascism, they just put their hands so far up its bum that they control every aspect of it. And that's what Democrats and Republicans want to do. I mean, with every law they pass, they're trying to, you know, it's kind of funny because the FBI's like mission statement is preventing people from interfering with interstate commerce. And I think that everything the FBI and every aspect of the government does, by definition, is interfering with interstate commerce.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And it's been tortured beyond all recognition, that whole clause. The interpretations of it over the years are just – you go from having to have a licensed car dealership by state – to trying to sell wine from one state to the other. It's just preposterous.
Yeah, and now, I mean, it's so backfiring, you know, to the point where, like, they're trying to – there are people in Bitcoin exchanges like the Winklevoss brothers, the Winklevi, the two idiots who say they co-founded Facebook when really they were just like there should be something where people can put their picture on the internet. And somebody else actually built it, and then they sued him for many millions of dollars. Those two guys own about 1% of the Bitcoin out there, and they are begging the government to regulate Bitcoin heavily because they're in a position to take advantage of that, as if they don't already have more money than God. But they, you know, they want to like destroy an industry to profit more. And the thing is, it's not going to work because it's like, yeah, some people will bend over for the TSA, you know, Department of Commerce, hand up their bum kind of search of regulation for Bitcoin. But to do it, like literally, it's going to take a couple $1 million in startup for a company to get in that game. And then they're going to have to get licensed in 48 states because there are 48 of 50 states where they have law, different laws and licensure concerning being an economic instrument exchange program. So no one's going to do, I mean, people are going to do that, but while everyone's bending over backwards to do that, Cody Wilson is going to invent Dark Wallet, you know, which is basically going to enable really, truly anonymous Bitcoin exchanges. And people will be like, what? What are you talking about? Use something licensed? I just bought a pizza, man. I just bought a car. What are you talking about?
Right. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the Hydra, the heads of the Hydra. You sever one off and three more grow in its place. I mean, the genie's out of the bottle now with all this stuff. And these Winklevoss brothers think that they can sort of co-opt Bitcoin or, you know, regulate it. And this idea of inviting the regulators to the party, I think, is a really bad idea.
It's really square, man. That's what I like to do to make fun of people like that. Anybody who's into government regulation, I just say they're square. I think the worst thing a musician can do is back a politician. I think it's so square when people do that. Musicians are supposed to be the hippest people around, but they just kill their credibility when they do that.
Oh, yeah. I saw Chili Peppers guy kissing his biceps saying in the service of Barack Obama, I thought I would lose my
lunch. And like those people didn't even realize how like fascist the wording of that commercial was, you know, in the service of one man. Like, it's such great man fallacy. You know, that's something Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, talks about a lot, is the great man fallacy. And, you know, no one person can save you. No one man on earth, you know, even if you're an agnostic or if you're a Christian, if you're an agnostic, you know, basically saying one man can save you is saying, I believe in God, even though I'm agnostic. And we call those people statheists. Because they're statists, but they're atheists, but they love the state like a religion. And then for Christians, or other religious people who are strongly religious, you know, kissing your bicep and saying I'm in the service of the state, that you are basically kicking God off the throne. You know, and neither of those are good things. If you're a believer or you absolutely don't believe, or regardless, it's like you're making a god out of a man when you do that. So we got about 5 minutes left here. Why don't you talk a little bit more about who you are and what you do and what your organization does?
Cool. I'm happy to. Well, one of the things that
Max Borders.
That,
your name is Max Borders. And
yes,
you publish,
my name is Max Borders.
You publish the Freeman, the magazine, The Freeman, for the Foundation for Economic Education, or FEE, which you can check out at fee.org. That's FEE.org. All right, Max Borders, tell me about it.
That's right. We have daily content, except for the weekends. You can check out all of the good stuff in libertarian thinking. It's economics heavy, but we're not all economics. And I'd love for you to check it out. It's FEE.org/Freeman. And I also, here in Austin, Texas, where I live, I have an annual event I put on with my buddy Seth, and it's called Voice and Exit. Voice and Exit it's an event that is really built around an ethos. And that ethos is the kind of opt-out culture we're talking about right now, is about dreaming big, being entrepreneurial, and making things happen through non-coercive means. So we're never going to talk about, you know, okay, let's get a bunch of government money to build a spaceship for NASA or something like that, government contracts or something. But, you know, people are into Bitcoin. People are into radical social entrepreneurship, startup cities, seasteading. You know, this is our ethos. This is like, we're going to do this. We're going to figure out how to make this cool stuff happen. And let's showcase the people who are working on it. It's not just about arguments and calling people statist and being puffed up on the rectitude of being libertarian. In fact, we don't even use the L word with Voice and Exit. What we want to do is say, if it's anything that's peaceful that people are doing to make the world a better place, we're into it. And we want to celebrate that. And we want to bring people into our orbit who also want to celebrate it. It doesn't matter what your political stripe is. So we kind of consider it a trans-partisan, trans-political kind of event. But that's what we do. And so we film the talks in high production value in sort of in the manner of TED. And soon we hope to build in a venture capital accelerator so that we can start implementing some of these great ideas as well. So that's the second big thing I do in addition to running the Freeman. And I love to write books. I finished a book a year ago called Super Wealth, which is about income inequality and why we shouldn't worry about it. And what we should really worry about is people who create value and help the poor in the best possible ways. That's the crux of it. And I tell you, Michael, I do love to write books. So it does break my heart that, you know, the dead tree thing is going away. And I do love long form. If I could do anything, I'd probably sit on a beach and write books.
I used to love writing books, and I don't think there's anything wrong with loving books. It's just basically I can turn on a mic and produce media that reaches more people quicker in like an hour and a half than I can in like a month of writing, in my experience. That's just me. I've also written 10 books. How many books have you written?
I've written 3.
Okay. When I've written 3, I couldn't wait to write the next one. And I'm not saying when you get to 10, you'll be sick of it. And also, I was writing books. I got to put a lot of myself in them, and I got paid to write them. But they were basically how-to books. And you're not really writing that. You're writing more philosophy books. And that's probably more rewarding, personally.
Yeah, it is. It allows you to really explore something in great depth and hope that your reader comes out of the other side transformed or moved in some significant way. Doesn't always happen, but certainly it can.
I think it's just with me, like for philosophy, it comes out of my mouth better than it comes out of my hands.
You're made for radio.
I write. I learned to type when I was 9. I can type like 130 words a minute, and I can connect my brain really well to my fingers and type and form complete sentences and paragraphs and pages and chapters and move them around and make them great and have them work as a piece. I'm really good at that, but it's really fun for me to do with how-to stuff. It's labor intensive for me to do with philosophy stuff. It's a left brain, right brain thing or something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. It's cool though. And I love exploring all these media. I'm totally psyched about it. And the more I get into video, the more I love it. Radio is cool. I've just had a ball talking with you today. And you know what? Before we go, I know you said we only had 5 minutes. So in the last minute or so, I want to send a big shout out and congratulations in advance to Nima V.
Yeah.
On his little one. I can't wait to meet him. Meet the kid and Nima V himself.
Yeah. You guys are in the same town and you said, I'd really like to meet him. And I said, he'd probably really like to meet you too. And I'd hook it up, but he's going to have a kid in about 2 weeks. And you said, okay, I'll meet him in a year. And as a father, you're coming from a place of experience there, huh?
Oh yeah, that's right. If he can get away for one or two beers, he'll be lucky, but it'll also be very therapeutic for him. So I'll be willing to buy him that beer.
He doesn't drink, but he likes events and he'll go to events where people drink. What you should do is when you have that yearly event, you should send me an email and I will tell him about it and tell him he should go and remind him. That's the only way to get him to do something. He works like 80 hours a week and he's gonna be a father. So it was great having you on, Max Borders from fee.org, and people should go check your stuff out. And I'm gonna, after we get off here, I'm gonna stay on and not record and talk to you a little bit and give you some audio advice. And maybe in 5 or 6 months when we're on a bunch of more stations, we'll have you in good audio come on and do the radio show.
Excellent, sir. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, man. It's been an honor talking to you.
You as well.
Take care. Oh, say worms. Everybody says worms at the end of our show.
Worms.
Thanks. Worms.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squig Elves from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom's Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I-O-E and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom Fiends.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.